Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hello, I'm Alan Cumming, and welcome to my shelves. My shelves are sort of a museum of my life. I like to keep things from my travels that are, to me anyway, the very essence of the experiences I've had. Sort of portals, if you will, to a specific time and place. And the inspiration for stories and memories and musings. Here's an ashtray I stole from the Hotel du Cap in the south of France on the night that I hosted the Cinema Against AIDS gala at the Cannes Film Festival. And I was absolutely horrified when the auctioneer came on stage and told Jennifer Lopez she looked like an ostrich. Here's some skin products that remind me of my dermatologist, who just a couple of years ago told me, when I showed him a little red dot on one of my testicles, that that was nothing more serious than a normal part of scrotal aging. Yes. Here's my Sid Vicious action figure, who, of course, appropriately is in a yellow coffin-shaped box. Here's my actual Etch-A-Sketch, my magic Etch-A-Sketch from my childhood. Still works. And today, be prepared to have your life spiced up, because I'm talking to Jerry Halliwell.
Do you know what's coming to my mind?
What?
When you say that, I'm thinking, Alan, you've got very good cheekbones.
Welcome, bienvenue, welcome.
The only people who will need to hear this introduction are those who've been living in a cave for the last 30 years. But Jerry Halliwell is best known as Ginger Spice, one of the Spice Girls, a band that sold over 85 million records and are the best-selling female group of all time. They also made the phrase girl power famous, and basically Jerry is the bastion of girl power. She left the band in 1998 and went on to have a very successful solo career, as well as becoming a writer, an actor, and a mum. I met Jerry because I am in Spice World, the movie. I play a character called Piers Cuthbertson Smythe, who had, fun fact, a chest wig. And it was such a great experience. I loved being in that film. It was at the height of the Spices' fame and success, and there were still these young girls who couldn't believe it had happened to them. And the most exciting thing for me, it was a lovely summer I spent in London making that film, and I was taught the moves to the Spice Girls dances by the Spice Girls themselves. Oh yes. The next time you see me on the street, ask me to slam it to the left. Today, I am looking at a range of things from my shelves. Honestly, I did not realise how much Spice Girls memorabilia I had on Alan Cumming's shelves. It's daunting. First of all, I have a Spice Girls Polaroid camera. Who knew? It's called a Spice Cam. And I must have got that when I made the film, I think. It's got little stickers of the girls on it. And then I've also got a Spice Girls piggy bank that says girl power in it. Nothing in it. It's going to shake it, but there's no money. I then found this tin that is a limited edition individual Spice tin of Spice Girls the movie. And guess who I've got, who my tin is of? Yes, it's Jerry in a very provocative pose. And I've also got a cassette copy. Imagine. I didn't realise the Spice Girls even were on cassette of their first album, Spice. And then I've got, and this goes on, I've got a lunchbox, a tiny lunchbox for like an infant. You probably just get a sandwich and a banana in there. And look at this. Inside here is another tin. There's a lot of Spice Girls tin. There must be sort of mines in little countries that are absolutely empty now due to the Spice Girls. This was a Spice Girls watch. The watch is not here. I must have worn it out, but I've kept the tin. Flashlight. Oh, I think I got that one on the film. Oh, it's a Polaroid flashlight. Maybe I got it with the camera. And then I've also got a Spice Girls dolly. I've got a dolly of Jerry holding a camera. That's in my other house in the city. But this is in my little lunchbox. There's a sort of a little doll of Jerry, a kind of little caricature-y one in her Union Jack, her iconic Union Jack dress, and her little red boots. She's looking pretty good.
I've still got dollies.
Yeah, that must be exciting.
It's funny. I don't know how much I can. Do you know what I mean? It's cute.
Yes, but it's sort of like I can see right now on my I can see my action figure from X-Men.
Now, do you know what I have to say? As soon as you were saying that, I was thinking about X-Men. I was like, you know how you played that thing that was like that sprung up on the ceiling?
Yes.
What was it called?
Nightcrawler.
Nightcrawler. That's all I remember, you being in like the frog position and, you know, hopping about.
It's a lot of leaping around.
You had to be very agile. I don't know. What do you think about when you see yourself in the as a toy?
I it's one of these things. I like it. When it first happens, I just think, oh my God, how exciting. Just the most exciting thing ever. I'm a toy. I'm a doll. And then you sort of forget. Then you get used to it and you forget about it. And then, you know, then other people freak, years go by and other people freak out about it more than you. And then you kind of think, oh, for God's sakes, it's fine. It's just a doll. But then you think, no, but they don't have their own doll. So they're not.
Suppose everyone gets more charmed by something that they don't generate intrigue. And then it becomes like anything.
Yeah. Like seeing yourself on a bus stop and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then the next time you're sort of embarrassed because people are looking at you, looking at yourself. Have you ever been caught like taking a selfie of yourself on a bus stop? I have.
Have you?
Yes.
The bus stop. So there was a big
There's a picture of me on a bus stop, right?
Of what?
And I go, of me in some film or something. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was just my face on a bus stop.
Yeah.
And saying blah, blah, you know, the film, whatever, or the TV show. And I thought, oh my God, look, I'll just take a quick selfie. Nobody will see me. And I took a selfie with my big head in the background. And somebody said, oh, taking a picture of yourself on the bus stop.
But actually, I think that's charming enthusiasm for, you know, you're allowed to feel proud.
Yes. And it's also hilarious. I mean, it's just.
Yes.
It's just like, you know, that you must have had loads of these things. But like, you know, I remember once being on the side of a bus and like being in a taxi and been chatting to someone. And we stop in traffic and they say, look round. And I turned out to look out the window of the taxi and there's my face on a bus. It was drawn up right next to us in the traffic. I mean, stuff like that's hilarious. And
do you know what's coming to my mind
what?
When you say that? I'm thinking, Alan, you've got very good cheekbones. Do you know
thanks,
what I mean? That has served you well. That makes you tiny. I think you've got a face that's quite ageless. Does that make sense?
Bless you. Well, sort of. I mean, I still get the sort of boyish, puckish sort of vibe.
Yeah, you've got that sort of energy that is ageless, which is really nice.
Bless you. But so do you. I think that's the curiosity thing.
Perhaps you're right. But maybe we've both got paintings in our attic like Dorian Gray.
Yeah, maybe that's our dolls. Maybe that's what our dolls
are. Yeah, there you go. There we go. And they're up in the attic, twisted and, you know, like...
You're in my lunchbox. You're doing all right, though, in my lunchbox. You look quite fine.
Oh, thank you. Do you remember when I came to see you in New York?
Yes, of course.
I saw you in a cabaret, and I was probably over 20 years ago.
Right.
And
God.
I think I just left the Spice Girls.
You just left the Spices, and you kind of like, you sort of were smuggled into the country, sort of thing.
Yeah, I was kind of on the run and hiding, trying to keep a low profile. And I came to see you, and you were amazing. And then afterwards, you took me to a gay bar where everybody was singing around a piano. So it was very.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it's
down
brilliant.
In the village, in the West Village.
Yeah.
You had a go, didn't you? What did you sing? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
I remember you said to the man, do you know any Spice Girls songs? I remember you asked the guy that.
I can't remember what he replied.
He didn't. He didn't know.
It might be interesting if we shared how we really got together.
Well, you should say it because you tell them because I didn't know you in that point.
I was studying Stanislavski at drama school. This was way
1993.
Back then. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There it was. And my father had died. My course in drama said that you have to go and see some different plays. And the one that I chose, because we were studying, it was Hamlet at the Dom...
Dom Warehouse, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. And in Covent Garden. And then I saw this play and it was amazing. And what struck me the most was this actor, the lead actor, who
could
was
that
playing
be?
And that was you, Alan. But what was really striking about your performance was the how much emotion that you evoked, that you were spitting and crying and just carrying this intensity through the whole few hours that it was. And it just left this lasting impression on me. I was like, wow, this guy is incredible. Because we can read Shakespeare and sometimes we don't understand the words, but we can understand the feeling if the actor
yes.
is good. And I felt that about Alan. And I was like, wow, this guy is amazing. Then cut to,
yes.
how many years, like five, I don't know, 4 or 5 years later, I was working on the production of Spice World and the casting, which is such an amazing thing to do. It's like colouring in because you think, oh, who could play this? Who could play this?
That's a really good way to put it.
And there's a lineup of different actors they were saying who could play. And I went, oh my God, that guy, Alan. Oh my God, I've seen him. Let's get a really Shakespearean actor to be in Spice World.
That's how it happened. I got the call from my agent saying, I remember he said, do you know the Spice Girls? I remember saying, I am alive in the world, so of course I know the Spice Girls. And he said, they want you to be in their film. And I said, what? And they said, yes, apparently Jerry saw your Hamlet. And for years I wanted to have a t-shirt made which said Ginger Spice saw my Hamlet.
That sounds very funny.
But what I thought was so touching about that, Jerry, was that, you know, what I tried to do playing Hamlet was make him, and what I do in every role is trying to think, who is this person? What is, like, forget all the other stuff that you're kind of the outside pressures or the ways you think you should perform something. Let's just go, even the language of it, let's go back to the very basics. He's this boy who's at college and has to come back from college because his father has died. And then all this other stuff happens to him, like, you know, his father's ghost comes back, his girlfriend dumps him, his, you know, just all the stuff. And has a bit of a nervous breakdown. That's my sort of potted thing of Hamlet. But what I thought was so touching was that, you know, they kept calling me a very lacrimose Hamlet, which is a word.
What does that
I don't
mean?
Know. It means that you cry a lot. Because I did. I cried all the fucking time. I mean, it was ridiculous. And I was just, I think that's partly the way I was in my life at the time. But I really rooted playing him in absolute grief. And I think that's what, so that it was, because I think it was only a relatively short time after your father had died that you came to the show with your college people. So it's such a funny connection.
Yeah.
And such a connection to you and the grief that you're feeling also about a father and the kind of complicated grief that there is when someone died. You know, I thought that was so touching.
When I saw you doing Hamlet and expressing utter grief, so you were doing Hamlet as a human being.
Yeah.
It was kind of grieving the words, the feelings that I couldn't find myself. And
right.
I connected with Hamlet because, do you remember, he sort of gets paralysis of analysis? Do you remember? He gets stuck.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. He just can't move forward.
I remember feeling I didn't know how to process it. So I became stuck in that respect.
Yeah.
So when I saw you sort of really express your grief, I was like, oh, okay. It was almost doing it for me, if that makes sense.
Totally. And I think that's such a beautiful thing. I feel honoured to have been able to help you in that way, even though I didn't know it. But you know, my favourite thing about being a performer or an artist, whatever, is that when you hear things like that, like a book that I wrote about my dad, people every day still on Twitter or something talk to me about it and say it's helped them.
Yeah.
Because I was honest about my experience and open about my experience, that then transfer. And that's actually, you don't even realise it at the time. Like I didn't realise when I was doing Hamlet that was going to have you would have that experience, or I didn't write the book for this to happen, but actually in doing, and I guess living your authentic life and sort of sharing your experience and sharing and trying to be honest when you perform people or sing a song, it reverberates.
That's very powerful.
Yeah, it really is.
They say if you stand in truth, your words have power.
Love that. Yes.
Hello there, this is my friend Joe.
Hi.
Now, Joe plays rugby for England.
Yeah, what's your point? Come on.
Well, Joe presents a podcast and it's my firm belief that you should listen to it.
Very interesting.
And here's why. Because it's not actually a rugby podcast because, well, let's face it, there's billions of them already.
No, 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 no. It's about you, the listener, and the jobs you do. If you're a teacher, an astronaut, a tree surgeon or a chef, then we've got loads of questions for you.
The Joe Marler Show. Because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions.
That's a great line. That is a very good line from you, Tom.
Thank you, Joe. You want to find it? Search for The Joe Marler Show in your podcast app.
Because everyone is interesting if you ask the right questions.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I mean, obviously, you've done the spices again. But from that initial time when you were you were packets of crisps, you were just everywhere. What is it like when you see those things?
I don't think about myself like that, I suppose.
Oh, you don't?
No. I suppose, you know, there's just other things in your life on the day to day, like obviously my family and children. You don't think about things like that.
Oh, there's the Spice Girls.
About myself as that. Do you know what I mean? That's not... Do you know what it is? It's like a Batman suit.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? It's not fake, but it's just like a Batman suit. It's like going from Bruce Wayne to Batman.
Right.
It's exactly
like drag. You used to say that Ginger was like going and doing drag.
Yes, exactly. It's just like putting your... There you go, and off you go. And it's kind of like a... It's a layer. It's a layer. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, yeah. I totally get that. I used to think... When I was in The Good Wife and I played like a man in a suit, and I remember thinking, why have they asked me to do this? Like, it's like a middle-aged man in a suit. I can't do this. I up until that point, I never really played real people. I played a lot of, you know, I played always quite crazy people or even not humans. And then I suddenly had this realization. I thought, oh, I am a middle-aged man. And if I wear a suit, I'll be a middle-aged man in a suit. The makeup ladies would be so frustrated with me, but also find it hilarious. Like, I would come in after a weekend and I'd have sort of glitter in my hair or something. So I was, oh yeah, at the club, someone threw glitter, or they'd be sort of peeling nail varnish off me to get me into this middle-aged political man in a suit. And I said it's like drag. And I think it's a really good way to look at things, actually, to sort of make it completely different to you and a heightened version of something.
Yeah.
And I think that's what all the characters, all the spices were. But I guess you especially, Ginger was she was the sort of the biggest epitome of that, I think.
I think it's like, do you know how Elton John, did you notice his sort of evolution? The costumes got bigger and bigger.
And then they kind of came down again.
Yeah, they came down again. So at the beginning, yeah, you try and outdo yourself. Go, what can I do next? Yeah. And then you go, okay, maybe it's time to take it off.
You know, I just was thinking when you talked about Nightcrawler, remember you came to the X2 premiere in LA?
God. See, I'm always supporting you.
You are.
I'd like to think, like, I'm one of these people that always sticks with a relationship. If you become my friend, I'm your friend forever.
I always think that about us. Like, we don't see each other for a few years and then here we are just chatting like old times. Yeah. I remember early in the 90s, kind of the year before I came back to London and I did the film with you, the spicy film. I was in LA and it was sort of, people didn't really have emails and stuff yet. So like being away for a long period of time working on a film and especially with the time difference and everything, you really kind of lost touch with your friends. And at the time in London, I had a very close-knit group of friends. I was very sort of needy of them. I remember so worrying about that I would have lost my friends. I'd sort of lost contact. I'd lost, you know. And then I went home and of course it was like I'd never been away. Like we'd seen each other a few days before. And it was a great lesson to learn that, you know, friendship, it's not about the number of hours you put into it. It's about a connection you have. And if you've made that connection, it can stand the test of time and it can stand absence and it can stand a lot of things. And it really was a heartening thing for me to sort of move forward in my life, thinking like, oh yeah, I'm going to have this life. I'm going to be away. I'm going to be traveling over the world. I'm not going to see people. But when you come back, they'll still be there and you'll still have that connection.
Yeah, really nice. That is a real testimony, isn't it, I think?
Mm-hmm. I've always thought of you like that, Jenny, I have to say. I've always thought you're very honest, wear your heart on your sleeve, and I just love that about you. I love that you've, even in the spicy days, and your decision to leave and everything, you're, and also your curiosity, I think, is really endearing, that you're always wanting to know things. I just think that's a really fantastic thing. And I imagine that must have been quite difficult early on, because, I mean, people don't, in a way, when you're a young woman in the pop world, people don't want you to sort of be like that. They want you to kind of like shut up and sing.
People don't like change, right? We all feel comfortable mm-hmm. when people are one thing. You know, it just makes us feel secure. But actually, change is inevitable. You know, we look like the seasons, we're all going to change, we're all going to evolve. I was speaking to a lady the other day. She's a journalist and a writer, and she's just approaching 70. I always look to older people and say, you know, what do you think is a one poignant thing that really helps you grow in your life? And she said, curiosity.
Mm.
I've always loved
learning
from other people. Everybody has a story. And I think it keeps life interesting. If you ask most artists, they like more than just one thing.
I was just talking to someone about this. The older I've got, and I've been eclectic in the different things I do for a long time. I think I've always been like that, but I've actually got more comfortable with that. Like the thing of, you sometimes feel, oh, I've got to stay in this lane. I've got to do this kind of work. I've got to. And then actually, you're older, you think, why should I?
Yeah.
I'm going to go and open a bar now. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to do that. You know, I'm going to design why some wallpaper.
Not?
Yeah. Why not?
Why not? I love that encouragement.
Why not? I'm going to have a, I'm going to do a podcast, and I'm going to talk about things on my shelves.
Actually, by talking to you, I'm thinking, oh, I'm not the only one that likes different things. You know, polymath. Mm. Someone has described, said, oh, you like a kooky polymath. I was like, what does that even mean? But then the second part, okay, so I like lots of different things.
Yeah.
I love writing, like you. I think we all borrow each other's confidence and experience to pull each other over the wall. It helps, giving yourself permission when you see other
people
inspiring you.
I remember that time you came over to my flat in London. You were talking about starting to do your children's books. And look at that.
We got Grant to help me with the first drawing, and then it became a series.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Absolutely, why not? I mean, I guess especially in Britain, there's a little people can be a little sniffy about you stepping outside of your box. But after a while, you think, I don't care. I actually don't care.
I've got the gift of age, and also I think that's probably is my box now. My box is a colourful rainbow one. Do you know what I mean? There's lots of different things in my treasure chest. It's like, you know, there's all sorts.
It was interesting during this talk with Jerry, we both realised that we're writing books at the moment. She's writing her first novel and I'm writing another memoir. We were talking about how fascinating it is doing research and how enjoyable that is. And I said it was actually really interesting researching yourself. And then I talked about being married a couple of times, and that led Jerry to tell a story about someone who was married many times.
Elizabeth Taylor. Right.
Yes. Yes.
If you're talking about remarriage, right, a trait of optimism. She was an optimist, wasn't she?
Totally. Totally. I met her, you know.
So did I.
Oh, when did you meet her?
This is a sad story. Well, annoying, right? I met her at a charity auction. Okay.
Right.
And I was with George. This is name droppy, okay? So I was
George Michael,
right?
I used to hang out with you and George a lot. He was such a darling, and we had such fun nights together.
He's so nice. I know.
And he was such a good friend to you.
He was amazing. Yeah, he was just like, you know, when some people come into your life, like,
yeah, like an angel.
Like angel, complete angel to me. So actually, you were a period of my life. You, George, New York. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah.
But we went to this thing. It was a benefit that Elizabeth Taylor, it was for AIDS Foundation.
Yes.
And she was auctioning off her jewelry.
Right.
And there was this heart necklace, okay? And I started going for the bidding, and I think I got auction fever, right?
Oh, God, did you?
Yeah, and then George started bidding against me. And I was what are you doing? I know it's a charity, but you're really pushing this up now. And anyway, so I got the necklace, and I had Elizabeth Taylor's heart necklace.
Wow.
It was amazing. But then my house got broken into and my jewelry got stolen. They don't realize that someone out there has got Elizabeth Taylor's necklace.
What?
Yeah, so if the burglar, you're listening and you've got a heart necklace, I don't think you realize it was it belonged to Elizabeth Taylor. Lucky
you. Wow. God, that's terrible though.
Yeah, that's a shame.
I loved her. She was hilarious. And I actually, when I met her, it was at a party, and I was first. I was like early. I can't believe it. I've never early. I think I was nervous. It was Carrie Fisher's birthday party. And
oh, wow.
I was so nervous. It was early. And so I was sort of sitting there, and the next person to arrive was Elizabeth Taylor. And she was sort of, you know, quite old and decrepit. She was helped in. She's on her sticks.
Yeah.
And they sort of plonked her on a chair in the hallway. Carrie said, oh, you know, Alan and Elizabeth. So we sort of chatted awkwardly for a moment. And then I sort of thought, I can't handle this. I'm just sitting
with these two amazing women.
Yeah, well, Carrie went off to sort of, you know, get canapes or something. And I was just me and Elizabeth Taylor. And we chatted for a bit. And I just thought, oh, my God. And so I went into the next room where the bar was to get a drink. And Carrie came through and she said to me, she goes, what are you doing here? I was like, what? She goes, do you know how many homosexuals would like to be in your position right now? Get back next door and flank that legend. That's what she said. Flank the legend.
Oh, my God.
So I went back in with my drink going, hi, Elizabeth. And then we started chatting properly and had an absolute laugh. And she had this gigantic diamond ring that Richard Burton had given. The Krupp's diamond or something. It was like a small car on her finger. And I remember I was like, holy shit, look at your bling. And she went, do you want to see it? And she sort of gave it up to me to look. And I was sort of looking at it. And she went, don't get your fingerprints on it. I went, I could get my whole hand on it, Elizabeth.
Oh, my goodness.
It was hilarious. And she was just really, really enchanting. And she said to me, she'd had a fall. That's why she's on sticks. And I was asking her about it. And she said that what had happened was that she got up from our table and her assistant or her maid had pulled the chair away, you know, thinking she was going to walk. And then she decided she'd forgotten something. She was going to sit down again. But of course, the chair wasn't there. So she fell right down and hurt herself. And I said to her, I said, oh, gosh, was it awful? Was there much pain? And she went, Alan, you have never seen such a black ass. And I just said, I bet I have, Elizabeth. And she had a really great sort of trucker's kind of cackle. Anyway, Jerry, I've taken up enough of your time. It's been so lovely to talk to you.
It's amazing to speak to you.
Thank you for walking down memory way, spicy memory way with me.
That's so nice. It's lovely.
Good luck with your book. And when things are back to normal and I'm back in London, I'd love to see you in real life.
Yeah, it'd be so nice. And big kiss to you and and Honey. How is Honey?
Oh, Honey's no longer with us, alas. Honey's, Honey died a few years ago.
In doggy heaven.
Yeah, she's actually where I am in this house here was where we scattered her ashes. So I feel
her
everywhere.
Oh, that's quite nice.
But now I've got two more dogs called Lala and Jerry.
Oh, Jerry!
Yeah, one called Jerry. it's a Jerry, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. He's a spunky little polymath as well. So
okay, very nice.
He's channeling you a bit.
Well, big kisses to you.
You too, my darling. Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate
it.
Oh,
it's an absolute pleasure. Bye.
All right, love. Bye. Well, now the U-Haul truck has arrived to take all of my Spice Girls memorabilia and put it back on my shelves. I hope you've had a good time listening to me and Jerry reminisce. I certainly enjoyed it. And I hope you'll join me for another stroll down memory lane next time on Alan Cumming's Shelves. Bye-bye. Alan Cumming's Shelves is hosted by me, Alan Cumming, and my predator... That's not anything weird or wrong or scary. It's just someone who is a mixture of a producer and an editor. You see, predator. His name is Jack Claremont, and he's an absolute darling. And we are part of the Crowd Network. Now, another Crowd podcast to check out is Death of a Film Star. These are the stories of Hollywood icons like Heath Ledger, Carrie Fisher, Robin Williams and more. They're beautifully written episodes all around 25 minutes long and they pay tribute to some of the greatest actors that have ever been. The episode about Chadwick Boseman is brilliant. So check it out. Just search for Death of a Film Star in your podcast app.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.